The Chodesh Adar. We continue digging into the happy month of Adar. We find the ongoing theme. Ongoing theme in the month of Adar in the holiday of Purim is masking, unmasking, covering, uncovering, and trying to reveal the inner essence. Let's explain. First of all, the Gemara in Betzah says something very, very interesting. Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Elazar Eliezer Berab Shimon Harotze Sheitz Kaimu Nechasav." One who wants his possessions to last a long time, Yita Bahin Adar. So he should plant in Adar. Okay, Shneimar Adi Bamarom Hashem Adir Adar Bamarom Hashem. Marom Hashem is it's in an elevated place. It's in a place where it's going to be permanent. It's going to be everlasting. So in Adar, whatever an Adar is Bamarum Hashem. It's something that lasts a long time. Inami Idra Kishme. So the Gemara says, what is an Adar? Well, that's the name of the tree. Kede Amri Inshi Mai Adra Dekaimi Ladari Dari. It's a type of a tree. Why is it called an Adar tree? Because it lasts Midor Lador. Adar, Dor Lador, from generation to another generation. It's a tree that lasts a very long time. If someone who wants to invest his possessions into something that will give him returns in the long term, plant an Adar tree. Rashi says, why this tree in particular? There are plenty of trees that will last long, that will be there for a long time. Ilan Chashuvu, Yesh Loshem Lemerchuk. Since it's a very Chashuv tree, so it has a name, and that name travels a very long way. The Omrim, and they say, Ploni yesh lo adar besadehu. And people, the word's going to spread, so-and-so has an adar tree in his field. Wow, really, he does? That's amazing, that's pretty amazing. And the word spreads, umitoch kach hinikrit al shemo, v'im holech lemedinat hayam. And if the person wants to travel somewhere, he wants to go long distance, uva acher v'hechzik ba, and comes another person, he sees, hey, there's a land, no one's there, let me just go and occupy it. And he says, all right, this is my land. So that's not going to happen if you have an adar tree planted in your land. Because yesh lo edim harbe shahaita shelo. There are many, many witnesses that this tree and the field belongs to you. Because an adar tree is a very chashuv tree. And therefore, everyone knows, right? This adar tree reveals that this field belongs to you. That's a simple understanding of the Gemara. But you do see from here that an Adar, is a tree that's very chashuv. And when one sees it, they automatically trace it back to its owner, to its essence, to its source. Pasuk says that about the month of Adar, V'achodesh asher nepach lahem miyagun l'simcha u'me'evel liyom tov. It's a month that we flip the script. It's a month of uncovering. It's a month of unmasking, where things seem to be a certain way, but once you remove all of those layers, you reveal that things are really a different way. In the Megillah, if you look through it, you will not find Hashem's name outright, as things are, things seem pretty coincidental. Things seem pretty, it just happened to be like this, and this person happened to do that, and he happened to have said this, and Mordechai happened to have been with next to Bigtan and Teresh, and he happened to have known that one language that no one else knew except for him, and this happened to be, and it happened to be, and it happened to be. Not one mention of Hashem's name. However, our job, when we're going through the Megillah, is to practice Megillat Esther. Megillah means to reveal. Esther means what's hidden. To try to uncover the essence of what was really going on. Esther herself, right? Kishma ken hi. Her name is Esther, means hidden. Why? Because she carried herself in a very discreet way. Regarding Esther and Mordechai, in fact, you find that they carry themselves in opposite ways. Very interesting. Mordechai, on one hand, was fierce, he was fearless, was not scared of anyone or anything. He was who he was, and he wasn't trying to hide it. He's a God-fearing Jew and proud. The Pasuk says, that everyone would bow down to Haman when he passed by. However, Mordechai, lo yichrav lo yishtachave. Mordechai, the only one. Lo yichrav lo yishtachave. He was called Mordechai HaYehudi. Although he wasn't from Shevet Yehuda, he was from Shevet Binyamin. He was called Mordechai HaYehudi because Yehuda was that poster boy, that poster Shevet, who was fearless. He was the lion. Wasn't scared of anyone or anything. But Mordechai, you find that although the rest of the entire Jewish community lived in fear, in trepidation, some trying to hide their identity, Mordechai was very much in touch with who he was, and he wasn't going to hide it from himself or from anyone else. On the other hand, Esther Malka, she lived her life in the exact opposite way. She hid everything from everyone. Her own husband, the king Ahasuerus, did not even know her. She was living in complete secrecy and hid her identity. This is obviously with the guidance and with the orders of Mordechai. But she carried herself in a completely opposite way. On a simple level, so you could understand this very, very easily. Mordechai was who he was. He wasn't trying to hide from that. However, Esther, right, the stakes were much higher for her as she was living with the king. The ramifications of revealing who she was and her identity could have been very, very scary. On a simple level, it makes a lot of sense. However, the common denominator between the two, even though in action and practice they were going about things in, you know, an opposite way, however, what they both had in common was that they both had absolute awareness of their identity and who they were. And although Esther hid that from everyone around her, she didn't hide that from herself. The Midrash tells us that Esther had 7 servants, one for every day of the week. And the 7th one, she named her Shabbat. And anytime Shabbat, the maidservant, would enter the room, she would know it's Shabbat. And that's how she would keep Shabbat. No one knew. No one understood. We know Esther kept kosher food, the Midrashim say. We know she kept the laws of Nida, as the Gemara say. So Esther was someone who, although to the outside world she was living in secrecy, but to herself she was absolutely in touch and had full self-awareness of who she was. So at this point, let's transition a little bit from Torah to the psychology and understand that in psychological terms there is a term or technique that is closely associated with everything we've just spoken about. It's called self-acceptance. Self-acceptance is the awareness and the acceptance of one's identity, his strengths, and his weaknesses, and being okay with it. Living with that acceptance. In clinical psychology, in positive psychology, right, it's a very important technique, self-acceptance. It's actually a prerequisite to change. You want to change? You want to make changes in your life? The prerequisite, the first step is what? Is self-acceptance. Understanding and accepting Ba'asher Husham, where I am right now. Who I am and what I am. What my thoughts are, what my actions are, what my tendencies are. And accepting it, not denying it. It's the idea of tolerating oneself to be imperfect and being okay with that. A person, if you think about it, could be living his entire life thinking about how others view him and whether or not they're going to accept him. And based on those thoughts will dictate his actions, what he does, and how he does it. Sometimes it's our friends' opinions that are motivating our decisions, motivating our actions. whether we do something, whether we don't do something. This, chas v'shalom, could lead a person to live a life of someone else, of somebody else. You're not living your own life at that point. You're living someone else's life. You're living someone else's thoughts. You're living someone else's actions. It could lead a person to putting on a certain mask, to masking himself from the public, and also masking himself from himself, hiding his own identity, his own tendencies from himself, not accepting it, not understanding it. Lacking that self-acceptance, someone who lacks the self-acceptance will also lack self-esteem, because one is dependent on the other. If you don't accept who you are, then how can you have self-esteem? How can you value who you are? Very popular intervention that's very often used in association with this, very, very popular, is what's called mindfulness. Mindfulness, translated as the state of active, open attention to the present. This state it's described by observing your own thoughts, your own feelings, observing them, accepting them, and not judging them as good or bad. Is what it is. I am who I am, and these are my thoughts. Because it's important to process your own feelings. It's important to understand what you're thinking, not to deny them, not to suppress them. It's important to be in touch with your thoughts, to be in touch with who you are. Rav Nachman and Breslov, and everyone quotes Rav Nachman as being, you know, the guy for Hitbodudut. Hitbodudut, right, we know, is this method of self-meditation. I don't know how to translate it in English. There is no translation, but speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, speaking to Hashem in a very innocent and a very raw way. It's taking your thoughts, your current thoughts, whatever they are, and using them to speak to Hashem with those thoughts, with those words, putting them to words. Not to hide from your thoughts, not to hide from who you are. Sometimes we need to take off that mask. And if we're not taking off that mask to those around us, at least take off that mask that's preventing us from seeing ourselves. Sometimes we need to ask ourselves, Nu, something happened, someone said something to me. We need to ask ourselves, Nu, what came up for you? What type of thoughts came up? What are you feeling right now? What are you feeling? To be in touch with your thoughts. It's important that a person tells over the story of his own life. Tell over the story of your life, who you are, what's happened to you, and when that happened, what were you thinking, and uncovering and uncovering and uncovering and understanding in a deep way. Because only once a person understands himself can he take those steps that are needed to grow and to be a better person. In Judaism, stories are very, very important because stories illustrate to us a reality that we could learn from and use to become better people. That's what stories are in Judaism. There's no stump story for no reason. It's there for a purpose. In Yahadut, that's the Tiferet Shlomo from Radomsk, or Shlomo from Radomsk writes that Sipurei Tzadikim or Sipurei Masiot, stories of tzaddikim, or stam stories in general that are motivating, that are inspiring, are also considered divrei Torah. And he says, I'll prove it to you. Because if you look at the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, Sefer Bereshit is dominated by stories. It's stories about Adam, Noach, the Avot, the Imahot, the Shvatim. It's all stories after stories after stories. How many mitzvot will you find in Sefer Bereshit? Not many. However, it's one of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and it's there to teach us. It's there for us to learn from. Stories. Stories of others, stories of tzaddikim. And then sometimes it's important to zoom out of our own lives and to tell over the story of ourselves. There is a certain technique called narrative therapy. Narrative therapy is kishmo ken hu. You're telling over, you're narrating the story of your life. And this could be beneficial in a few ways. First of all, it allows for a person to observe their own story. And once you zoom out and see your story from like a bird's eye view, it's much easier to dissect it and much easier to make the changes that you need to make in your life. Working to identify any problems in that story. But it also helps a person to separate, to differentiate between the problems and between who you are. So when you zoom out and you look down at the story of your life, says narrative therapy, you're viewing the problem as separate from who you are. And the famous line that narrative therapists use is, the problem is the problem. You are not the problem. The problem is the problem. Let's together work on the problem. So it helps separate between the problem and your identity. And thereby, when you live like that, it's much easier to make changes in your life. To view it as a story. Tell over the story. To be in touch. In fact, sometimes, although it's important to understand your actions and why you do them, but your actions do not define who you are. Does not define your true ratzon, your deep down ratzon. And that even though sometimes we may do things or say things or even think things, they do not mean that we are defined by them. The Sefer Megillat Sdarim, the Sefer Pirush on the Megillah, writes on the Pasuk that Achashverosh wanted all the Jews to come to the party, to the celebration. And it says, Ve'ashtia chadat en ones. And the drinks, there are a lot of drinks. It was chadat, they're all kosher, en ones. There was no ones. And he explains, what does it mean, en ones? And that Achashverosh ordered, had strict orders, not to allow a single Jew to get drunk. Not to allow, yes, there are mefarshim that they got trashed, but according to this explanation, ein ones. Make sure they do not get drunk. Why not? Because afterwards, when we get them to sin, it's going to be that they're sinning biratzon, out of will. Ein ones. It's not out of ones. It's not like they were not in control of themselves. They were in complete control. They were sober. They were not drunk. Why? Because I want to show them that this is who they are. They are sinners biratzon because their sins define who they are. Chas v'shalom, it's not true. A sin does not define who a Jew is. And the Jew's neshama is completely pure and is not subject to sin. A person must always look down, zoom out and look down at his own life, at his own actions and understand, yeah, listen, there are problems that I'm dealing with and I need to fix them. I need to get better at life, at mitzvot, at averot, at learning Torah, at waking up in the morning, whatever it may be. But that does not define who I am. That's not who I am. To have a self-awareness and a self-acceptance of who you are at all times. All these techniques that we just spoke about, so they're meant to help us understand who we are. Mordechai, Esther, they had two avodas. Mordechai was more open. Esther was more in hiding. In fact, the Gros says, I heard this quoted, I didn't see it inside. The Gros says that Mordechai represented the guf and Esther represented the neshama. So the neshama is hidden. The guf is external. But both were fully in touch with who they were. So, to understand Adar, the month of Adar, is to uncover, is to unmask. Whether it is to unmask ourselves to ourselves. Whether it means unmasking ourselves to the people around us. Whether it means unmasking HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. Adar, we know the Sfarim say, stands for Aleph Dar. Aleph represents Alufo Shel Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Master of the World. And Dar means to live, that Hashem is living in this world. Hashem is here. Pasuk Nisik Parasha, it says, Vasuli Mikdash, Hashem wanted us to build a Mikdash, V'shachanti B'tocham, Mishachamti betocham, as the Mefarshim say, betocham, it's incorrect grammatically. Betocham, it should have said betocho, but betocham means betoch kol echad ve'echad. To bring Hashem, allow Him to enter into each and every single one of our lives. To unmask Hashem in the world and also in our lives. That in a nutshell is the month of Adar, is the story of Purim, is the avoda of Mordechai, the avoda of Esther, and our avoda in life as well. Our avoda in life is to understand ourselves, to have self-awareness, to have self-acceptance. And the first step to self-growth is to fully understand who we are and what our tendencies are and what our temptations are and to own up to them. And the next step could be how to work on them. So I wish you all a Chag Sameach, Chodesh Adar Sameach, Shenichnas Adar Me'abim Simcha. Thank you all for listening. Have a great night.